Sports Beat Extra on Beat.
Sophie Becker, thank you so much for joining me. Fresh off that 200-metre national title victory. You must be delighted with that, considering it's obviously the first time that you've won a title in that field.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Yeah, I'm still on a high from that. I have not done a 200 in my senior career. I think the last time I competed like nationally at a 200 was, I was probably a junior, so like under 20 age level. So yeah, it was really fun. I really enjoyed it. And yeah, I went in to win it and to set a PB. So I slept very well that night knowing I did both of those things.
I know you were speaking afterwards about how much of a confidence boost it was to kind of, I suppose, get you in line back for getting to that 400 metre level and knowing how crucial those first 200 metres are. Like, for you coming out of that, was that the main goal? Was it to get that confidence back, and sort of the cherry on top was kind of getting those two extra bits as well?
Yeah, to be honest, I treated it like a training session, a speed-based training session. As I'd mentioned in my post-race interviews, I've done a handful of 400s this indoor season and they just haven't clicked for me. I don't know, like, training has been going really well, but I just don't know. I just haven't been able to put the race together. Like, I've had really good sessions, but when it comes to actually racing and putting all the segments together, it just hasn't clicked. I'm not sure if it's the fact that, like, I missed indoors completely last year, so this is like my first time on an indoor track in like nearly 2 years, I think, altogether. So I do think that's a component of it. And then, yeah, I kind of started back training a little bit later this year just because the season last year went on a bit longer. So, yeah, and then I don't really know. It's just hard to put a finger on it as to why my 400 just hasn't been clicking. But we decided, my team and I, that I would do a 200 over the weekend, and I can only benefit from the speed for it because obviously you need to be fast to do a 400. So yeah, it's really helped. The fact that I PB'd, it's really helped my confidence going into 400s now when I go into the outdoor season, just to know that I have that raw speed in the first half of the race that will then hopefully bring me home, and I'm confident in like my speed reserve and my ability to push through at the end. So yeah, I think it has helped my confidence for sure.
Does it change the way you train for a 200 as opposed to a 400?
I think if I were just a 200 metre athlete, I would say yes, but I am still a 400 metre athlete, and it just happens that I'm fast and able to run 200s, because some 400 metre athletes would see themselves as more of maybe an endurance base, so they would maybe dabble sometimes in an 800, whereas I'm definitely more on the speed side, so you will never catch me running an 800 more. I'm the speed base, as I said. So if I were to like properly train for 200s, there would definitely be a lot more speed, I would say, like shorter distances, maybe like 60 meter, 90 meters. I still do that because, as I said, you need to be fast to run 400s, but not to the same degree as a 200 meter or short sprinter would, because I obviously need to do a lot of longer sessions to build lactic tolerance and to be able to push through the lactic acid in a 400 meters.
Does that, I suppose, that speed aspect of your sort of career, does that come from that juvenile level where you were running mainly at 100 meters?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think I've always been naturally fast, not the fastest by any means, but my speed has definitely come more naturally to me than my endurance. My endurance has been something I definitely have had to work on throughout my career, and it's probably been something I've been maybe a little bit more self-conscious of. I feel like I'm always like, oh, I need to just improve my endurance. And I definitely think I've done that over the last number of years. My endurance is something now that I am a lot more confident with. But yeah, I think my speed is just something that has come naturally to me, which I'm grateful for, because it's hard to get fast. Obviously, I want to get faster. But yeah, I think I'm very lucky just to have some natural speed. And yeah, I'd really like to improve it and just keep getting faster.
I think it's probably fair to say that you were kind of thrust into the public zeitgeist back in 2024 with all the success of the World Championships and the Europeans and then the Olympics as well. Like, do you feel that there's more eyes on you when it comes to competitions like these, and you have a bit more pressure on you to perform to that, even that extra level of the other athletes that are there?
Yeah, I think for sure. Pressure is definitely a privilege, but sometimes, you know, you want to go out and just, you might be in the middle of a training block and you're treating this race as just a training session. And, you know, it mightn't be the fastest on the fastest time you've ever ran for the reasons that I stated, like, yeah, you're in the middle of training, but everybody else doesn't know that. And it's very hard to get a race kind of under the radar where you just want to, as I said, yeah, just test a few things out or trial something new in a race. So yeah, there's definitely more eyes on myself and on like the whole of the relay team and Irish athletics as a whole, which is, it's so exciting because I think for so long we were nearly fighting to, you know, make a headline or make the news. So it's really exciting. But yeah, for sure, it does add that little extra element of nerves to it. Like, I don't think a few years ago, if I had run a 201, I don't think I'd be in here talking to you about it today. So yeah, it's definitely a change, but I think it's brilliant. Like, any publicity that the sport can get is amazing.
It's probably, though, like, on top of that as well, like, it can be nerve-wracking if there's always constant eyes. And you mentioned, like, that maybe you're going out to try new things on the track and people don't know that, and if they see that you maybe aren't whatever perception they have in their head of how you should be performing, if they don't see that, you know, maybe public opinion on that could shift very quickly. Like, and I know that probably hasn't happened yet, but like, do you, I suppose, like, how do you deal with that, I suppose, on a personal level? Because you obviously know there's probably not much you can do to control that, but you kind of just need to get on with it, do you?
Yeah, I think honestly last year, like the 2025 season, was a bit of that for me. I found out I had a stress fracture after Paris, and then I worked through that and rehabbed for months and everything, and then I tore my hamstring. So it just never really clicked for me last year. And then my racing was so interrupted, or my training was so interrupted, that when it came to racing, it just didn't click, as I said. So yeah, there was definitely, people definitely had things to say about that, you know. But I think the way I kind of deal with it is I just don't really engage with comments or articles or social media or anything like that, whether it's good or bad. Like, somebody could be saying the best thing about me and I won't see it, because I just think it's better to separate myself from that stuff.
Do you find, I suppose it's probably one of the benefits of being part of a relay team, that you've got three other athletes alongside you that are competing in that same vein. Like, are they good people to be able to lean on in times like that, and they'll have kind of a shared experience in that sense?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I'm so lucky, the girls particularly on the relay, like, we've all formed such a strong friendship and bond, and we just have such fun together. And like, between all of us, we've all had our fair share of injuries and illnesses and just seasons that have not gone to plan, and you can't quite put your finger on it. And that's just the nature of being an athlete. Like, it's a lot of pressure that you're putting on yourself and putting on your body, and sometimes you might be doing everything right and it just still doesn't work out the way you've hoped for, or the way that in your head you think it should. So it's great in those times to have people like that on the relay, and just in Irish athletics in general, who know what it's like and who see you turning up at the track day in, day out, see you on the ground, you know, throwing up after sessions and putting in their work, and it just still doesn't work out. So it's so amazing to have that support, because yeah, as I said, I was there last year, and it's not a nice place to be. So I've been very lucky with the support from the girls, for sure.
I know you mentioned obviously that before you would have been like dying to get, you know, even a bit of coverage on the women's side of athletics and everything, and like, I suppose perceptually the media kind of only really latched onto it back in 2024, and then it kind of took off from there, and now we're seeing a lot more of it, especially with Kate O'Connor's success last year as well. Like, when you look back at obviously the growing trend of, I suppose, women's athletics in Ireland, and that's been gradually growing behind the scenes for a while, were you surprised when it almost suddenly just like the balloon popped and all of a sudden everyone was on top of you?
Yeah, it was crazy. Like, I think I suppose when I was kind of starting to get into the more international scene in athletics, Phil Healy was everywhere. She was the national record holder at the time over 100 and 200, and everyone knew her name. And she, I think, really put the name out there for athletics and sprinting in particular for women. And yeah, it was kind of building slowly. I think like the World Championships in 2023, that was shown on TV, and I remember everybody talking about it after that. So I think that kind of started building the narrative, and then it literally rolled perfectly into 2024. So I think people were starting to kind of build a bit of a story and a relationship with the athletes that they were watching, say, in 2023. Mm-hmm. And then come 2024, they were able to follow them through. So I think it's been building slowly. But yeah, I think definitely in 2024, it just exploded, like hearing about the queues and the waiting lists for kids to join athletics clubs, and just seeing, getting tagged in so many stories of parents with their kids going off for races with bows in their hair, because we all wore bows in our hair in Paris. And yeah, it really did just explode, and it doesn't seem to be going anywhere. Like, if the national championships at the weekend or anything to go by, it was packed, sold out, kids wanting your autograph, wanting anything signed, and it's just really, really exciting.
I presume you've obviously, like you mentioned, having seen that impact on younger girls in the sport. Like, we went out to St. Joseph's Athletic Club last year, and I know you were an alumni alongside Mia Griffin. Am I right in saying you ran relay with Mia?
Yeah, that's correct. I can't tell you where or when, maybe community games, but yeah, we did.
That's kind of an insane, like, prospect to know that two Olympians were running in that, like, sort of thing. Like, were you surprised, I suppose this may be a bit off course, but were you surprised that Mia ended up becoming an Olympic cyclist at the end of the day?
I'm not surprised she ended up becoming an Olympian, because she's always just been so talented and has just always had that work ethic. Mm-hmm. The cycling was definitely a curveball, because as I said, I grew up training with Mia in St. Joseph's doing athletics. Like, she wasn't cycling then at all. And then I suppose we both went to college and she found cycling then. Mm-hmm. I don't want to tell her story, but I'm pretty sure that's how it went. So yeah, I definitely didn't see the cycling at the time when we were like 15, 16. But now seeing her success, it all makes sense. So yeah, I like, it's a small club, but it is an absolutely amazing club. Like, the coaches there, it's all volunteer, the kids, it's just such an amazing community. And like, I definitely would not be where I am today if it wasn't for them, particularly Pat Power. Like, he really just introduced me, I suppose, to proper drills and some routine with training and everything. So yeah, it's amazing what a small club has achieved. Mm.
You mentioned, I want to touch on, obviously, being an Olympian, going to World Championships. Do you still get nervous before races?
Oh, yeah, of course. And I wouldn't have it any other way. I was actually in a school this morning and the kids were asking me about dealing with nerves. And I was saying, like, you know, I work with a sports psychologist, and over the last few years, we've reframed saying I'm nervous to I'm excited, and just little different things like that. But you need the butterflies and the excitement for sure. I did a race last year, and I don't know, for whatever reason, it was quite low key. There wasn't much excitement about it or anything, and I wasn't nervous at all, and I did not perform well. Mm. So if that taught me anything, it's that I do need the nerves. And I won't say I like them, but I definitely see the benefit in them for sure.
Sports psychologists, I mean, they're kind of a very much a growing part of any sort of professional sporting background now. Like, if you're training with coaches that maybe probably didn't have access to those when they were at the height of their game, like, how do you, is there a clash there with regards to, I suppose, kind of, I suppose, how am I trying to phrase this? Is there a clash in terms of, like, the way in which you both come through it? Like, maybe there's a missed shared experience there because maybe they didn't have access to the things you have now.
Between my sports psychologist or my coach?
Your coach and yourself. Coaches. Like, would you find that maybe there'd be a clash of ideas on how to do stuff, and maybe the sports psychologist might have a bit of a different way of framing things that maybe that coach wouldn't have thought about?
Yeah, I've definitely heard of athletes experiencing that with their coaches. I, thankfully, my coaches, Jer and Aideen, are very open. They very much encourage us to check in monthly, if not weekly, with our sports psychologists. Like, you can't go and expect after one session for, you know, you to be fixed and not get nervous and to be excited to race. Like, it's, the brain is a muscle that has to be worked constantly. Like, the same as if I go out and run a lap, I don't expect to be faster after that. So I think that's a really good way of applying, just working with a sports psychologist. And yeah, my coaches are really, really open to it, which is great. But to be honest, even if they weren't, I have just seen such, like, the Sophie I was 6 years ago before I started working with Jessie, my sports psychologist, compared to the Sophie I am now. Completely different people, like, with my mentality and my beliefs and everything like that when it comes to racing. So yeah, and Jessie has also, like, introduced me as well to meditating, and I would consider myself an avid meditator now, I would say. Like, it's definitely something I incorporate into my morning routine. So I try to meditate every day. And then, like, before a race, the meditation kind of meshes with visualizing. So I'll be sitting there before a race, visualizing how the race is going to go. And I think, like, a combination of, just working with a sports psych, meditating and visualizing, it just all comes together and works together.
Does it, I suppose, having a sports psychologist help with the post-Olympic come down? Because I remember hearing Ellen Keane talk about being, like, kind of in this fishbowl at the Paralympics, and afterwards then all eyes are suddenly gone and you're kind of brought back to reality, and it's kind of a real snap where you're kind of having to live a completely different life yet again. Like, do sports psychologists, I suppose in your case, help with kind of coming back to that and maybe making that transition a bit more gradual and not as sort of jarring?
Yeah, the post-Olympic aftercare that Sport Ireland provide is amazing. So after the Olympics, everyone has a debrief with a psychologist, just how the Olympics went for you, how you're feeling. They encourage you to have plans in place for after the Olympics, because obviously, you know, for the past 4 years, the Olympics has been all you've been thinking of, all you've been working towards. In athletics, is obviously the pinnacle of our sport. And for some people, it doesn't work out the way you expect it to. I would say for most people, it doesn't. Obviously, I had a great experience in Paris. Some could argue it wasn't finishing fourth. I think it was amazing. But it definitely took some weeks for me to kind of come to that realization that I was happy with my Olympic experience. And it makes sense that people hit those Olympic blues. As I said, it's what you're working towards. It's in the back of your mind every single day. Like, every decision you make, in the back of your head, indirectly in some way, you're going to be thinking, okay, well, how is this going to affect my training, and how is this going to affect my performance, which is, how is that going to lead to, you know, qualifying for the Olympics? I think in athletics, we're lucky that kind of every year we have a major championships to look forward to. So last year we had the World Championships, this year it's the European Championships, next year it's the Worlds again, and then it's the Olympics. So in athletics, if one championship doesn't go to plan, you usually have another one to look forward to in the next 12 months. I'm not obviously sure about other sports, but I think that really helps in athletics for sure.
Do you get much time for downtime, like to kind of just step away from everything? Like, or is that kind of difficult when you're kind of in a very, I suppose, physical job?
It's definitely difficult for sure. And as I touched on, like, just even still, I might have a rest day, but I'm still thinking about, okay, well, I need to be resting today to make sure I in as good health as I am for, as I can be for tomorrow's session, so I can perform as well as I can. I think even on rest days or some days that I have some downtime, it's still at the back of your head. It's just, I suppose, constantly thinking about how things are going to affect your performance. But saying that, like, after the major championships, at the end of the summer, either for all of September or all of October, just depending on when the championships end, we have, like, off season. So it's like a full month off. No running, no nothing. You will not catch me exercising in my off season at all. Not in a gym, not going for a 5K, nothing like that. I really just, it's the time I just get to indulge and just, you know, the mundane things in life. Maybe it's just going for a takeaway and not having to think about, oh, how's this going to affect tomorrow's session, or just meeting my friends for some drinks, or just chilling at home. Like, I'm obviously based up in Dublin, that's where my training group is, so I rarely get to come home to New Ross. So that's what I did in October, just gone for my off season. I came home for like 10 days and it was just bliss, just being able to chill with my family, meet up with my friends, go for walks on the beach. It was really nice.
Does a degree in genetics and cell biology, does that lend itself well to being a 400 metre runner?
Not really, no. No, maybe if I think about, oh, how will I deal with this illness that I'm after getting? But not really. But I had such an interest in biology in school. So that's what led me to go and study that in DCU. And I worked for a while then in Pfizer, kind of in the drug development side of things. And that was really, really fun. And then after Paris, I was in a position to step away and go full time as an athlete. So I'm enjoying being a full time athlete as of now. And then I'm also confident in the CV that I've managed to build up, I suppose, since I left college. I've for so long tried to manage being a full-time athlete, but an athlete and also balancing a professional career as well. And I think I balanced it very well for as long as I could, but I was very happy when I was able to kind of just pack away the professional career for a while and just go all in on athletics.
What was it like doing that though? Because like that's a very big decision, like in life-wise, even if you think, oh yeah, I can absolutely do this and I can do it full-time, no hassle, like, you know, you are stepping away from maybe another part of your life that you have a really big interest in.
Yeah, I think, I couldn't do it for so long because financially I had to work, obviously, I'm living in Dublin to pay rent, to pay my coaches, everything in between. But also, I think I liked the idea of not identifying fully as an athlete because it just added more pressure, I think, in my head, because I suppose if things didn't go right or if I didn't qualify for a championships when I was working, I was like, oh, well, I'm not a full-time athlete, or, well, I'm working like 3 or 4 days a week. Like, of course, there's a reason why it didn't happen. So, yeah, maybe a bit of the underdog sort of mentality that I was like, oh, sure, if it doesn't work out, this is why. But a bit of apprehension, I suppose, in like fully committing and my whole identity being an athlete, which I'm not going to lie, it's still like there's, now that it is my job, there is pressure that comes with being an athlete and that being my identity to a lot of people. Like that's how most people probably know me, as Sophie the athlete. So there definitely is pressure that comes to that, that comes with that. But I think I'm dealing with it well. And yeah, as I said, I made the decision to go full time, and then I actually ended up finding out then that I had a stress fracture in my foot. So I had a break in my foot, and in the same week that I decided I was handing in my notice and going full time, I also found out that I had this stress fracture. So that was definitely an identity crisis. I was like, have I made the right decision? Like, am I even ever going to be able to train with this? But it was the right decision to make, and it actually turned out I needed, even though I wasn't able to train as I normally would with the amount of rehab I was doing and cross training in the pool, physio sessions, doctor sessions, everything in between, that was a full-time job in itself. Like that was a 9-to-5 job. So yeah, I'm happy with my decision, and I've really enjoyed like my winter training. Of I didn't get to do it last year, as I said, I was injured, but this year I was actually able to be an athlete for the winter and really get stuck into those those gritty sessions that I think will hopefully come to fruition, hopefully in the summer.
Coming back from injury, you know, I kind of draw on something that a lot of soccer players will say, that when they come back from maybe rupturing an ACL or something, they don't feel fully back to themselves until maybe the first tackle in a match. You know, what's the sort of equivalent for that in athletics? Is that kind of like your first run, or is that your first training session, or is it the actual first race?
I would say first race. For me, it was. My first race was at the World Relay Championships at the start of May last year. So that was my first race. We were trying to qualify the relays for the World Championships in Tokyo that were just on during the summer. So although I had done so many training sessions at like what we would call race pace, so like the same pace as I would race in, and I had hit all these targets and goals that my coaches had set that would on paper indicate that I am in good shape and I'm ready to race, there's still nothing that prepares you for it until you actually run. Just even the crowd and the pressure and the nerves and the noise and other competitors, and just even the whole like process of a race warm up, like it's a ritual, I would call it. You know, like race day is a ritual. I think most athletes are have a very kind of sacred ritual that they follow on race day, of things that they do or things that they eat and music they listen to. So I think it wasn't until I got to put all of that stuff together that I felt we're back. And it was a good race. It was probably my best race actually of the season last year, was that race at World Relays. Yeah.
I suppose general question on the 400 metres. What part of it do you find the most mentally challenging? Is it that first 200 metres, maybe the bend, or is it the straight at the end? Or
oh, the last 100 metres for sure. That's when the pain starts to kick in, is usually around 300 and 20 meters, mm-hmm. actually, yeah. So maybe the last 80 meters. The first 200, as I said, I'm a speed-based 400 meter athlete. That's fine. That's easy. And then from 200 to 300 is fun. You're kind of getting to see the stagger unwind with the other athletes. And then you hit the home straight and you hit good old the lactic sniper, as we call it. And yeah, it definitely hurts. The faster you get, the less it hurts, because I feel like you get a little bit further up the track each time before the real pain starts to hit. But yeah, the last 100, and that's probably where I do a lot of my visualization for, just visualizing like keeping my hips high, pumping the arms, pumping the knees, and just keeping my eyes set on the finish line.
Do you think much during a race? Like, does time slow down in a sense when you're racing? Because I know on TV, like, you see, even for the 200 meter, 23.43, like, that's nothing, like, in terms of time wise. But when you're out there, does it feel that much longer? Or?
I feel like I go completely deaf during a race and I stop thinking. Mm-hmm. And it's literally as soon as I'm in the blocks, the only thing I hear is the starter saying, "On your mark, set," and then the gun. And then as soon as I cross the line, I hear the crowd again. But for those, as I said, give or take 51 seconds in between, I don't hear anything. And well, I know I've ran well if I don't hear anything. If I'm like kind of thinking too much during the race, I know that I maybe haven't started my race as fast as I should have, or I'm just not locked in as well as I should be. So yeah, I think that's always a good indication if I can't really remember the race, if that makes sense. And then that's when I usually would go back then and look up the stream to watch it back, and then I can kind of piece bits together. But yeah, I don't think, and I remember when I started doing 400 meters, that was like my big fear. I was like, oh gosh, I hope I don't think, I hope I don't have time to like think during the race and make decisions. So yeah, thankfully I don't. But I know, like, obviously people, if you go up again to 800, there's a lot of thinking that has to happen because there's tactics involved and you're not in your own lane. But yeah, thankfully for 400, it's your own lane and it's just a sprint, empty the tank.
I know a lot of athletes talk about that, like, if they're not even if they have a very good race, but if they're racing, they won't remember anything from it afterwards. And like, I suppose my question is, how do you handle post-race interviews then if you can't really remember what you've just done?
Yeah, it's a good question. I suppose it's like a state of flow, I would say. If I can't remember things, I've entered my state of flow. Yeah, I think you kind of piece it together. A lot of the time the interviewer will recall bits back to you, like David Gillick. Obviously he was an athlete himself, so he knows well, I think, like, he'd ask very good questions that you can kind of gauge what you maybe did during it. So he might say like, oh, you went out very hard and like very hard for the first 200, and then I'd kind of think back and be like, okay, yeah, I did do that. So yeah, I think it's like piecing it back together. But yeah, it's kind of like an out of body experience, I would say. It's more like I can kind of watch pieces of my race from above, sort of, but not actually there on the track, if that makes sense. It's a very weird thing. I would love, yeah, out of body. I would love to wonder what it's like for maybe, I don't know, soccer players who, you know, kick a penalty and take it, or yeah, just in high pressure situations in other sports. I'd be really intrigued what it's like.
I know we've talked on it a little bit, but what's for you now in the short term future? Like, what are those main goals that are driving you now?
Yeah, so for the 2026 season, we have the World Relay Championships are on in Botswana at the start of May. So I'm hoping to be on the mixed squad and the women's squad out there, and hopefully we'll get both relays qualified for the World Championships next year. So it's like the qualifying competition for the World Championships next year. Mm-hmm. So it'd be great to get that box ticked, and then I can just focus on my individual 400 for the rest of the season, and hopefully qualify then for the European Championships, which are on in Birmingham in August. So yeah, I'd be hoping to be there individually and also as part of the women's and the mixed relays. So yeah, that's it. I think like all eyes for sure are going to be on the women's 4x4, especially because the last European Championships back in 2024 was when we medaled, we came second. And that definitely got people talking about the Irish women's 4x4. So yeah, there's going to be pressure and eyes on us, but I think that's good. We perform well with that.
Is there any bucket list items you'd want to do as a racer? Like, is a particular venue you'd like to run in, maybe a competition?
Oh, That is a good question. The Monaco Diamond League looks amazing. Like, it just looks so luxurious. It just looks so luxurious and flashy and just amazing. Now, I need to get a little bit faster if I ever want to get picked to go there. But I think that would definitely be a big race to go to. And just any of the Diamond Leagues, to be honest. I was lucky enough to do one a few years ago in Morocco. And just the level compared to, you know, the standard races you do around Europe, it's, you know, it's a Diamond League, just from the hotel to the food that's served to just how everything's conducted within the stadium. Yeah, it's amazing.
And then finally, I know you were out of school today and we were talking about St. Joseph's earlier. If there was, I suppose, if there are young girls now listening that are thinking about athletics down the line, and they probably have this sudden sort of boost in energy now because they've seen how successful yourself and a lot of the other women on Team Ireland have been in the last few years, what would you say to them as a guiding piece of advice?
Go try it out. Like, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but I actually started my athletics career as a wannabe heptathlete, which, if you saw me trying to get over a hurdle right now or throw a shot put, you would not. You would think I'm lying. So I think, like, go, give it a go. There is literally, as I was saying to the pupils in the school today, athletics, I know I'm being biased, obviously, because I'm an athlete, but athletics truly has something for everyone. Like, the range of body types, the range of sports, the range of abilities and talents that athletics caters to, it's, there's something in it for everyone. So if you go and you decide you want to do long jump and then you actually figure out you're better at throwing the shot put, like, give that a go. I just think, and even if you decide athletics isn't for you, it's going to benefit your other sports. You know, like, a lot of county teams now are seeing that sprint mechanics and technique is so important. And they're actually getting in contact with a lot of athletics coaches and asking them to come and do some sprint workshops and mechanic workshops. So even if the athletics isn't for you, like, there will definitely be benefits to your endurance, to your balance, to your strength, to your speed. It just, yeah, it's the best.
Kate O'Connor's position is safe then in the heptathlete role, yeah.
You never know. I might make a comeback. No, definitely not. Oh my God. But I have a All-Ireland medal. I came third in the heptathlon. There was three people in it. So
that's always something to brag about.
Nobody needs to know that part though. I'll just leave it that I came third.
Absolutely. Well, Sophie Beckett, thank you so much for joining me. It's an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Are you looking for a Columbus car dealership built on tradition and trust? Byers Auto, family owned since 1897, offers top new and pre-owned vehicles. Visit us or shop online at buyersauto.com. Byers Auto, driving the next generation of buyers.